Hello, Ramblers and Gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling, and the old email, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Hope everybody had a great 4th of July. We're one day later than usual this week because I just got back from celebrating the holiday in beautiful Bemidji, Minnesota. My wife's whole side of the fam got together at my in-laws, hung out on the lake, had a few brews, fried up a little walleye. Really nice, really good, relaxing time, a little bit of a refresher. And the fun continues here today. We've got Tracy Murray, former Trailblazer, Rocket, original Raptor, Bullet, original Wizard, Nugget, and he was a Laker too, had a nice long 12-year career in the NBA. And Tracy, a UCLA Hall of Famer, is currently an analyst with the Bruins. Of course, we're going to talk to him about what it's like going through this time of year for a player, free agency, trades, the draft. He dealt with a lot this time of year during his career. We'll talk to him about his 50-point game that he had while playing for the Wizards, and we're also going to get some A++++ stories out of Tracy about playing pickup with MJ, hanging out with Undertaker and Yokozuna and those guys. I'll say this, some people have stories. Tracy has stories. Here he is, Tracy Murray. Tracy, I am honored to have you on the pod. I have vivid memories of watching you play, in particular your years here in DC, and we've got a ton of good stuff to cover. So thanks again. I'm very excited about this one.
Well, thanks for having me on. You know, it's been a minute since I've been on something in DC, and you know, just shout out to the DC fans, man. I mean, they really looked out for me when I was there and made me feel welcome. So I really appreciate them.
I've got a lot of DC questions coming your way. First up, though, let's start here. A little more than 30 years ago, June 24th, 1992, you're drafted 18th overall by the Spurs. And 1 week later, before you've even played a game, you're traded twice to the Bucks, then to the Blazers. At the time, you were quoted by the Associated Press as saying, "I heard about Portland 2 days ago. I thought it was a trade rumor until it happened today." Mm-hmm. How do you remember feeling about the uncertainty that comes with being in the NBA, being an NBA player, especially this time of year?
I thought I would never stop moving, you know, to get drafted on draft day by San Antonio. When I sat down and they were at commercial break, I had two different rosters in my hand. They told me not to get comfortable with my hat, that I'm probably going to be traded. So the trade didn't go through at the time on draft day, but just like you said, a week later, I was moving. So I did know about Milwaukee. I did not know about Portland. And I heard like later on, like right before it happened, that Portland might be the team I would end up with. But even going to Portland, I had no idea that the trading was going to stop. I just felt like no one wanted me.
I saw the other day Kevin Herter, who got traded from the Hawks to the Kings, tweeted something along the lines of, "Well, I've now officially had my welcome to the NBA moment." You kind of had it immediately.
Yes, immediately. I mean, the welcome to the NBA moment is when a team said they're going to take you in the draft and they didn't take you. I had three teams tell me they were going to take me and they didn't take me.
Really?
So now it's like, okay, where am I going? You know, you can't believe what people tell you when it comes to the draft, because everybody's trying to throw each other off and maneuver and get what they want or what they feel like they need for their team. So never believe what they tell you.
Who were the three teams that told you they were going to take you but didn't?
I had my best workout with Houston, and they took Robert, which that worked out. That was a good move for them. Robert Horry.
Yeah.
The Clippers said they were going to take me at 14. They took Randy Woods. The Lakers said they were going to take me at 15, and they took Anthony Peeler, which Peeler was a good pick for them.
That must have been excruciating, sitting through the draft, watching that happen.
It was excruciating being at the draft and being the last in the green room. You know,
oh my God,
Doug Christie, Doug, me and Doug were the only ones left in the green room, and he went the pick right before me to Seattle. So, like, I lost it after that. I went and took a walk, and then they had to call me back pretty quickly because I was in the hallway walking around already, and then they said that, you know, it was my pick that, you know, come on, hurry up and get to the stage.
You know, we saw the, like, Aaron Rodgers, for instance, on TV that whole time that he was stuck in the green room. Were you on TV for that? Were you with family? Describe what that was like.
I was sitting at the table with my agent and my family, and, you know, the stress just got so bad, man. I just got up and just went and took a walk in the hallway in the back, you know, because it was at Portland Memorial Coliseum at the time. I end up playing there for a couple of years, but that I got real familiar with that hallway quick.
You've also been part of a really big trade. We've already seen one this offseason, the Rudy Gobert trade getting dealt right to the T-Wolves. Of course, KD has requested a mega trade himself. We'll see if that ends up happening. You were part of one in 95. You were dealt alongside Clyde Drexler to the Rockets in exchange for Otis Thorpe, Argentinian forward Marcelo Nicola, who never ended up coming over to the league, and also a first-round pick. Of course, you and Clyde would go on to win a championship in Houston. Take me back. What was it like being involved in a trade that big?
Well, the crazy thing is we were in Dallas on a road trip, and I went over to the arena early to go work out and do my pregame routine. I walk out onto the floor in my Blazer gear, and there was a public address announcer or somebody over there working on the desk over by the mic. And they're like, what are you doing here? I'm like, I'm about to work out. I'm not supposed to be on the floor. No, you got traded. That's how I found out. And then back then, the little flip phones, just the gray Motorola flip phones, just came into play. So I flipped my phone in the locker room and I called Clyde. And Clyde's like, where you at, man? I'm headed to the airport. So that's when I hurried up, got out of my gear, and like raced to the airport and barely got there in time. But yeah, I jumped on Clyde's coattails and Dream, and they carried me to a championship.
I'm glad it worked out for you, but I've got to come back to this. The PA announcer is the one who told you that you'd been traded to Houston?
Whoever was setting up, they were setting, I don't know, it might have been an engineer that was setting up all of the stuff there, and I guess he was up on what was going on. It's like, dude, what are you doing here?
Oh my God. And you're just like, oh, okay, I guess,
right. My agent then didn't even tell me. It's like,
wow, that's insane.
It was crazy.
Talking about player movement, I'm a big Wizards guy. I was a big Bullets guy. I personally feel like your time in DC could have been a whole lot different. It could have been special. Not that it wasn't good, but could have been really special if things had gone a little differently. First off, you guys had a lot of talent on those teams. Chris Webber, who ultimately would be traded for Mitch Richmond, a little past his prime, I think it's fair to say. Juwan Howard you had on the team, Rod Strickland, Calvert Chaney. And if I'm not mistaken, Tracy, you had what, six coaches in four seasons while you were here?
Yes. Six coaches in four seasons. There was no consistency at the helm. So how are we supposed to be consistent with our roles and being consistent in our minutes and being consistent with our play if we don't have any consistency in the leadership area?
You still cool with any of those guys from back in the day?
I just now got off the golf course with Chris Webber.
Get out of here.
Yeah, we just played just now. But yeah, he's in Vegas doing an appearance for the summer league. And we had a chance to get out this morning.
Oh, very nice. A quick 18?
A quick 18, yes. We were up pretty early. We were up at about six, you know, at the course of six. Got it done.
I got to ask, who won?
I didn't even add up the back nine. We were okay. We're in a hurry to get out of there because he had a call, and then I had to jump on with you.
You, of course, had some incredible highlights here in D.C. In particular, you know this was coming, the 50-point game, February of 98. C-Webb is out. Juwan is out. You and Rod Strickland just absolutely take over. Take me back to that. What was that game like?
I'll tell you what, that's 6.5 years of being teammates, you know, being teammates in Portland and being teammates in Washington. Our chemistry on the court was unbelievable. You know, he knew where I was. That's why it was so hard to lose Chris Webber, because Chris's chemistry with everybody was unbelievable also. But going back to that game, that was a walking into that arena, I had a different type of confidence. I knew guys were hurt. I knew I was going to start. I knew I was going to play for a long period of time. I was going to play through my mistakes. We didn't have very many people. We just signed Lawrence Moulton that day because we only had seven people, so he had to be the eighth. Just coming off of shooting in the three-point contest, so you kind of feel special coming from All-Star weekend. Plus, it was in the arena where I scored 64 points and 19 rebounds in the state championship, so I felt really comfortable in that particular arena. And, you know, the ushers joking with me coming in, so I felt real loose. You know, in my home state. And from the tip off, you know, Rod was looking for me right away, and we started clicking immediately, and before you know it, 29 points at half, and then boom, it ends up at 50 at the end of the game.
Few follow-ups to that one. Number one, you actually had two chances on the free throw line.
I should have had 51, yeah.
you end up on the free throw line, two shots, and you've got 49 points. You missed the first one. I watched the highlights of the game back before doing this interview, and you see C-Webb and Juwan Howard just going nuts over there. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
what are you thinking when you barely missed the whole game, and then you miss a free throw to get to 50? What are you thinking?
I was 8 of 8. You know, at that time at the free throw line, and then missed that one and made that. So the percentages always average out. You know, that's the way I look at it. I was shooting, you know, 85 to 87% from the free throw line. So it was going to fall.
It's a fun box score to look back at. Strickland, of course, had 20 assists. You scored 50, had zero assists. Not that I blame you. I don't know why you'd pass when you're that high. Here's some other good things for the listeners here. I'm sure you remember all this, but Ben Wallace started the game for the Wizards. He had three blocks. Now Lakers coach Darvin Ham came off the bench for you guys. He played 5 minutes in the game. And then Lawrence Moten had written down two. You signed him that morning.
Harvey Grant played. Terry Davis played. Calvert Chaney. You know, it was we were thin, man. We didn't have very much to go. We didn't need anybody else to go down. But you know, with that eight players that game, you know, we were, you know, a well-oiled machine, and we got it done.
Obviously, you had a ton of teammates over the course of your career, Hall of Fame teammates, Hall of Fame personalities as teammates, shall we say. Here's what I want to do, Tracy. Can I read off a few names, and then I'm hoping you can just give me a quick story. Just tell me something about the guy that I may or may not know. Are you up for that?
Okay.
All right, here we go. First up, Akeem. Give me something on Akeem.
The best I've ever seen. The most dominant, he was in destroy mode against David Robinson. I've never seen anything like that in my life. And talking about somebody that's extremely cool, but he's a killer on the court. He had a calmness and a serene about him. He was just real calm. And he just went out there and destroyed you. I mean, just dominance.
Calm off the court, too, in the locker room.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dream was one of the nicest dudes I ever played with. Always joked with you. You know, he was a true leader. You know, he talked to everybody. It wasn't like, you know, he kind of stayed to himself or anything. He was – everybody loved Dream. Dream was a good dude, man.
2002, you played with Shaq and Kobe.
Yeah. Those two guys was probably, and I have to agree with Shaq, possibly the best top five, top three, 1-2 punches ever. I mean, you're talking about somebody that was just powerful, just unstoppable when he got the ball in that paint, in the low block on the paint. Nobody can do anything with Shaq. And then you have Kobe, who was just special. You know, everybody get the Jordan comparisons. That was a carbon copy of Jordan, if you were going to get it, was Kobe Bryant. Both of them were completely different, completely opposites. Shaq likes to play and goof around and have fun, to where Kobe was like extremely serious, you know, and you know, sometimes that's oil and water, fire and ice, whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, on the court, you didn't want to face both of those guys.
A little while back, we had Rick Bucher on the podcast, who, of course, covered those teams. And he said at the time, at least for the media, you were a Kobe guy or you were a Shaq guy. That was his interpretation. He said Shaq stopped talking to him after a while because he felt as though Rick was a Kobe guy. As teammates, did you guys feel that way too, or was it completely different?
No, we couldn't do that. You know, I mean, as teammates, you got to be able to talk to both, and you got to be able to try to iron out if there's something going on, try to iron it out. You know, of course, I was closer to Shaq because we were McDonald's All-Americans, so I had history with Shaq. But Kobe and I met Kobe the first day he came to L.A. And, you know, I was there at the infamous wrist break at Venice Beach. I was there, you know, and you know, we had the same agent. I knew how great he was going to be. He loved the game. He was very driven, very ambitious, extremely hard worker, great, you know, family, you know, with you know, coming up. And they moved. They remind me a lot of my family at the time, where they were doing everything as a unit. So I had the utmost respect for both. I wasn't on Team Shaq or Team Kobe. I just wanted those guys, whatever the problem is, iron it out, because I wanted another ring. That was my stance.
How about playing with George Mirer, son?
Big George is fun, man. I mean, he's he's always joking. You know, you got to watch him. He's a joker. You know, but you know, as far as playing with him, you know, you want an easy assist, throw that ball high. He will catch that ball, turn, and score it. I mean, he was, you know, a good 60% inside the paint. Fun guy to be around. We went to the My Giant premiere, and you know, he did that during the time we were teammates. So I love Big George.
You have quite a bit of experience playing against really big time guys too, and I believe that includes during the filming of the first Space Jam movie, right? I'll set this one up, but this is true, right?
Yes.
Okay, so
I was an extra in that movie.
Were you really? I didn't know. Yeah. You were actually in the movie.
I was on the Phoenix Suns team, and when Barkley was doing his thing, I kind of ran across the screen a couple of times. Yeah, I was on the Phoenix team.
Okay, so legend has it that MJ had a tented hardwood court built on the Warner Brothers lot in Southern California, according to a piece from Jay Donde. It was a really good story. People should look it up if they're interested in this. Guys who played in these games included Ewing, Barkley, Lonzo Mourning, Larry Johnson, Grant Hill, Rodman, Glenn Rice, Juwan, I think Magic played once or twice, Reggie Miller once or twice, and you. That had to be nuts.
And there were a lot more. Rod Strickland came through. You know, you had Lamont Murray, who was there, Mitchell Butler, who played. It was an NBA All-Star game there every day. And on the front row, you had like A-list celebrities watching us play. It was unbelievable. You had the Long Beach Arena court. They built a big white tent over the top of it. They had, like, if you walk in the door where you park at, to the left, you had, like, a golf net where he can, like, hit drives into a net. You had, like, a putting green. You had, then forward, you had, like, a little dressing area. Then along this way, along the long part of the court, you had all these weights that was there from when Mike was lifting weights or guys were lifting. Like, if you lost, you were there for a while. I mean, because it's one court, you're going to seven, a lot of guys on the side, and it was the most unbelievable pickup games that you want to play in. And if you can't get better as a player that summer, you need to stop playing basketball. I mean, I went from here to here, so I can imagine everybody else did too. Michael raised the intensity for everybody, and you know, the competitiveness in there was unbelievable. You know, as I say again, you lose, you're waiting about 4, 5, 6 games. There's a lot of people waiting to play.
Obviously, MJ's competitiveness is legendary. You probably saw the Dream Team documentary where they had the whole thing on the scrimmages those guys played with, you know, MJ on one side, Magic on the other. And it was incredibly, you know, just real deal guys going at it, going as hard as they could.
We lived it in the dome.
That's how this was.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There was one day, him and Reggie Miller, I thought it was game 7 of the NBA Finals. Those two were going at it. I mean, I was on one. I don't even remember whose team I was on. I think it may have been Reggie's. And I was just like, here. I gave him the ball, and I was just watching. We people would give them the ball and just watch them go. That's how intense it was with those two. And, you know, it was fun to watch, man. You watching the pure essence of basketball being played with passion with everybody who was top at the time, you know, mid to top tier players. And it was a fun summer.
How did guys get invited to that game? Or was it just like a call, like, hey, if you're good enough to play in this game, come on by. How did that go?
Well, most of us, and Shaq came in there a few times too. Most of us were Arne Tellem and David Falk clientele. But if you were in the area, UCLA guys or guys that play in the NBA from UCLA, or if you were Laker and Clippers, you were also invited. So it was crazy up in there as far as talent. Like, everybody literally got to play their natural positions.
Wow. A little while back, I was listening to a podcast. I want to say it was Ryan Russillo podcast, but it was Gilbert Arenas who was on there talking. And he talked about how some guys might be okay or good in the NBA, but they're even better in pickup scenarios. Yeah. He said Nick Young, for instance, was way better at pickup, in his words, than in a real game with refs and all that. Was there anyone like that in those games? Obviously, all of you guys were incredible basketball players, but was there anyone who was so good in those games in particular and might surprise people?
I think everybody's better in pickup games because you're free to play your game. There's no restrictions on you. There's you know, no play call from the coaches, and you have to go stand in the corners. Like, everybody's literally playing. And you know, there'll be days where, you know, a role player sticks out like he's the best guy in the gym, and the next day, you know, then Mike gets mad and he shows you that he's the best guy in the gym, and then you have Grant Hill comes up and he shows you he's the best guy in the gym. So the whole summer you had different people step up. I think the most impressive person he was Mike's number one pick, and people are going to be surprised when they hear this, was Chris Johnson, went to UCLA, Marcus Johnson's son. Like, he really improved that summer. Chris Johnson was Michael Jordan's first pick every day when he was picking teams.
That's incredible.
Played extremely hard.
He's picking Chris Johnson over Barkley, Ewing. Chris Johnson. Incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
But Chris Johnson played extremely hard. Mike loves people like that. That play hard, play the role. You know, he did what he was supposed to do to win. Mike likes winning. He was making winning plays. So, yeah, I mean, Chris was impressive during that summer.
I'm a big pro wrestling guy. I believe you are too, right?
Yeah, I know a few of them.
Okay. I heard that you were really cool, are really cool with Undertaker, Yokozuna. I heard you on Rikishi's podcast. Godfather, I believe. Is it all those guys? Is that accurate?
I'm an honorary BSK guy.
What was that like? Because obviously, you know, I mean, for wrestling fans, and my apologies to people who are listening to this and have no idea what, but basically, and tell me if I'm wrong here, BSK was kind of like a clique. The two most famous guys in there were probably Undertaker and Yoko, right? Mm-hmm. And actually, Undertaker has a tattoo on his stomach that says BSK. This is what it is. And as a wrestling fan, I've never actually talked to anybody who hung out with these guys, so I'm really interested in asking you about it. But the nightlife in particular, these are guys, they worked hard, they played hard. And mm-hmm. And I've even heard other pro wrestlers say, I could not hang with those guys. What was it like hanging with those guys?
Well, I mean, I never had any wild nights with those guys like that. You know, I was BSK stands for Bone Street Crew, and Bones was Dominoes. We all played Dominoes. So you know, I've sat at the table with a couple of the guys, especially Godfather. He's like my big brother. He lives here in Las Vegas. And we played Dominoes last week.
Really?
Yeah, we played Dominoes last week. So, I mean, just to, you know, we tried to catch up and get Keishi in a couple of times, but Keishi's been busy. He's back and forth between Vegas and L.A., and he's based out in L.A. now. So he was out here at the time when we were trying to get him in the games. But I played with Taker. You know, it's like these dudes, what people don't understand is they're all former athletes. You know what I mean? They played basketball, football. You know, Godfather was a basketball player in high school, turned football player in college. You know, everybody knows Taker played basketball. You know, I mean, Henry O. Godwin and Phineas Godwin, I mean, these, you know, Midian, these guys are all really cool. Savio Vega, like, this is all the, you know, of course, you know, rest in peace to Paul Bear. He's in Yoko. And I mean, people didn't know how cool, you know, Yoko can play basketball. People didn't know that. As really? Big as Yoko was, Yoko could play basketball.
How? Describe Yokozuna's game.
Yoko, power, you know, but he also had a nice little jump shot, you know. Yoko could play some basketball. That's what people didn't understand. I saw some footage of him playing basketball.
Really?
Yeah.
Really take you down in the post,
I imagine. Yoko was really cool, though. You know, he was, like, cool as a fan, man. I mean, I miss that dude. He was one of the first dudes that when I met these guys, it was right after the 94-95 championship. The business was kind of down a little bit. They didn't have the big trucks with the pitchers on the side, security keeping people out. They didn't have all of that. They were working at a baseball diamond in Rancho Cucamonga, California, where the AAA California Quakes play. And they were working there one night, and I heard they were there, and I just went over there just on the humbug. I was like, let me go over here and see if I can meet these dudes. So I went to the box office, and I was like, look, I'm Tracy Murray. I played for the Houston Rockets, won a championship. I heard the guys are here. And they just said, oh, go ahead. They're in the dugout. I was like, okay, let me not, like, barge in there because – I'm not trying to get my behind kicked walking up in there with all of these dudes. So I knocked on the door. They said, come in. I kind of poked my head in a little bit. And Taker and Godfather saw me first. And Godfather was in the Kama Mustafa gimmick. Not Kama Mustafa, Kama the Supreme Fighting Machine. So they were
Yeah,
they were doing casket.
The red jumpsuit singlet type of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
They were doing casket matches at the time. So I came in there, and then we all said, hey, man, what's up? We all started talking. We all hit it off. And later on that night, I ended up walking Lex Luger and British Bulldog down the aisle when they were going against Owen Hart and Yoko for the belts. And it was fun that they included me in the match.
That's hilarious. So that was just random. They're just like, oh, Tracy Murray's here.
Come on in, man. Be a part of the show.
That's fantastic. And you're still a fan of WWE and all that?
I still watch, you know, because you got to look at a lot of their kids are wrestling. Like, Kishi's kids are wrestling, man. You know, he's got three sons in the business. You got
killing it.
Two twins. Yeah, you know, that
the twins are, in particular, yeah.
You know, and then you know, Roman is their cousin. And then you got the younger son that's in NXT. Yeah. So, I mean, you got a lot of second, you know. And then I met Randy Orton a long time ago, him and Brock Lesnar, when they were first. It was a WrestleMania in Toronto. And I was doing fan access stuff for them. I was in doing a few matches on the fan access in that part. And that's where I first met, and I did some matches against Brock, you know, just kind of distracting him a little bit with Crash Holly. God rest his soul. And then Randy was him and Randy came in at the same time. They were being introduced in fan access. So I met those guys then, and we've been cool ever since as well.
I love that. That was everything I hoped to get from you about those guys.
And I was co-chairman of a golf tournament with Hulk Hogan up in Toronto.
Really? So yeah. You're like, you were even deeper into this and are to an extent than I realized. That's really incredible.
And we all do a lot of charity events too. So we run into each other charity events.
Well, cool. Maybe I'll give you a call. We did a WrestleMania episode, and I think we're going to do a SummerSlam episode here in the next month too. So maybe we'll get you back on.
We're the ones. Part of the bloodline.
Bloodline all the way, huh? Actually, that'd be perfect because the guest I think we're going to have for SummerSlam, same guy we talked to for WrestleMania, big bloodline guy. So, very good. I still have to ask him, but I think he'll do it. Anyway, few more random ones for you. Then we're going to take it home. One, you're a UCLA Hall of Famer. What do you think about the school joining the Big Ten in a couple of years?
I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. The Big Ten, wow. You know, I mean, it's a great move for the school money-wise and competition-wise. You're going to be going against great schools every day. I think the disadvantage is to the UCLA and USC student-athletes who have to travel every league game to the Midwest. That's where I'm looking at it from the athlete point of view. You get to recruit a little bit differently because you're in the Big Ten. I think you're playing in the best league in the country, obviously. I just think that looking at it from a student athlete point of view, and UCLA goes student then athlete, they're going to be gone a lot because of those road trips back and forth to the Midwest. And that's going to be a little bit tough. It's going to be an adjustment.
And I mean, you said Midwest, East Coast, man. They're going to be coming to Maryland, my alma mater, Rutgers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll be there this year, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I believe that to be true. I was talking with a buddy about guys who came along in the NBA and were good, but maybe they would have been even better had they played in a different era. And your name came up pretty early, in fact, 6'7" wing, I mean, range like few others had. Incredibly pretty jump shot, 3-point threat, and then some. Do you ever think, oh, man, if I had come along 15 years later because of the way the game is being played today versus when you were in your prime?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think I would have flourished in this era because – and plus, you can't touch people anymore. You know, I used to get torn up running across that paint. You know, the big guys are boom. They stand you up. It, you know, when you're running the floppy play, they stand you up. And, you know, that hurts, man. Rearrange your back a couple times, you know. But I think if I was able to shoot 10, 12, 10 to 15 three-point shots a game instead of 3 to 5, I think, yeah, of course, I'll be averaging over 20 a game as well, you know, and to feel free to shoot that shot, you know, that's another thing, you know, like back when I played, I had two misses and I may as well just start walking to the bench. I knew a sub was coming after two misses. So two misses in a row. So, you know, it's like to feel free and you miss and okay, just shoot yourself hot. You know, I think anybody can shoot themselves hot if they're capable of knocking down shots.
Even your 50-point game, if I'm not mistaken, I think you only had like 10 three-point attempts in that game. I mean, and that was a game you scored 50 in. Today, you literally would get 10 every single game.
Right. Now imagine that 50-point game and I had the ultra green light to shoot like crazy 3-point shots. And then you start shooting crazy 3-point shots and you're going to have confidence and you're going to start making a lot of those. That 50-point game could have easily been a 60, 65-point game.
Yes, 100%. And if anybody questions that, I urge you to go back and watch the highlights as I just did. Easily, that one could have been 65. I mean, you're playing out of the post for a lot of that game.
Right. Fading away, you know. That was the first time I really, other than the 40-point game or that Toronto Raptor year, that was the first time since that Raptor year where I was able to play free and like play my game without no restrictions, not looking over my shoulder. And you know, when you're playing that way, I don't care if you're on injured reserve and you only play like three games a year. If you get a chance to come out there and they say, hey, go do whatever, play like you did in high school, those guys are going to go get 30 and 42 because guys are that good in the NBA. You know, we just have to accept roles in order for the team to work. And, you know, if Rod didn't have 20 assists, I wouldn't have 50 points. You know, Rod had a monster triple-double game. It was like 22, 20, and 12 or something like that. It's like, that was a monster game, man. And, you know, like my 50 don't go unless he goes like the same way, you know. It's like one thing doesn't go without the other.
You were here in D.C. for the last year of the Bullets and the first year of the Wizards. Yes. Did you and the other guys in the locker room, did you care about that? Was it a big deal? Was it a thing?
Well, I didn't care for the name change, but I did understand what they were saying, you know, if, with the murders and, you know, people getting shot or whatever, if that's what they felt that it was going to, you know, drop the numbers or whatever, if that's what they felt, then go ahead and change the thing. But I don't think the name of the team has to do with anything happening in the streets. And, you know, I mean, Wizards, it took a while to stick, you know, because we're so used to the Bullets. They won the championship under Bullets. They have tradition under Bullets. So, yeah, I mean, it took a while to get adjusted to it. But you know what? We had the same team. We had talent. And that first year in the MCI Center, you know, under Wizards, you know, we called that place the phone booth because we played extremely well in the first, 30 games of that season?
Yeah, yeah, thereabouts, for sure. I remember the phone booth days. All right, last one. This is technically a gambling podcast, Tracy. here are the odds for next year's NBA championship. According to FanDuel, the Celtics actually are the favorites, 5-1, followed in order by the Bucks, Suns, Clippers, Warriors, Heat, Lakers, Sixers. It's early, but who you got?
It's really early. The Celtics are really upset over what happened last year, and there's not too much movement going on with the Celtics. Tons of movement with the Warriors. I think that's why they dropped. Don't know if there's going to be any more with the addition, a possible addition of KD. Who are they going to lose if they do that trade? They've lost Gary Payton II, which, you know, he was a big part of their defense. So I think the whole Boston series changed when Payton got healthy and he came and he started playing defense. They also lost the kid that used to play for the Wizards. Otto Porter. You know, they lost him. He was a big part of what they did. So they lost a lot of – they lost almost all of their bench pretty much. So I think that hurt them. They still have key pieces. You know, they still have, you know, Kevon Looney there. They still have Poole. You know, they still, I think, have Kuminga. So they still have a couple of nice pieces. I think they felt like they did well in the draft as well, you know, picking up a couple of players that could fit the system.
I like that
defense. But I do like the Celtics, where, you know, right now as the favorite.
Very
as
good.
As much as it pains me to say.
Very good. Who do you have an NBA team that you root for? Because you played on so many different ones. Do you have a favorite team?
I don't have a team that I root for. I've been on so many teams, it's hard to just root for one, you know. I grew up a Laker fan. That's why I'm not really a Celtic fan. That goes back to childhood. But I look at the Lakers, the Blazers, the Raptors, the Wizards, the Nuggets. You know, I look at all of them, the Rockets. You know, I keep eyes on them because I played for them. But that's about it. I look at Minnesota because Jordan McLaughlin is one of our players from our AAU program. So I really watch his progress and his team's progress. I watch also the Brooklyn Nets because of Kessler Edwards. He's from our program as well. So, you know, those two young guys had a pretty good year this year, and I'm following their progress.
Tracy, plug away, man. Where can listeners find you?
Well, they can find me at Twitter, at Real Tracy Murray, Instagram at Real Tracy L. Murray, Facebook, Real Tracy L. Murray. I'm on the UCLA broadcast. I broadcast for UCLA on the radio. And then sometimes if you're tuning in LA, I'm on the Slam Dunk Show with Rob Fukuzaki, Norm Nixon, and Michael Cooper when the postseason's going on. So, or you can catch me on your podcast.
Rambling and Gambling Pod.
Rambling and Gambling, baby.
My man, Tracy Murray, NBA great, UCLA great. Awesome stuff. I cannot tell you, Tracy, truly, like, not just as a podcast host, but just as an NBA fan, as a fan of yours personally, really enjoyed this. Half those questions I didn't even have on my rundown. I was just like, this is cool. I need to know about this. So thank you so much. Truly one of the NBA's good guys. I one of many. And I really appreciate you coming on. I really appreciate you spending this much time with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
There it is. Ladies and gents, thanks to Tracy. That was awesome. I mean, you give me MJ and Yokozuna stories in one interview. I am in. We're back to our normal schedule next week. So the pod's going to come out Wednesday. We'll get back to more gambling too. The plan is to talk about the Open Championship. That interview's booked. And who knows what else. We'll go back to our usual format with, you know, several different interviews and all that. By the way, speaking of that, drop me a line. Let me know what you want. This is that kind of dead time of year when we can take the pod in a million different directions. I personally loved the football stuff we did last week. It really got me in the mood for football. I put in a bunch of silly futures bets like immediately after for next NFL season just because I was so into it. But sounds like a lot of people weren't quite ready for it just yet. They weren't quite back in the football frame of mind, which I get. So send the feedback my way. It's very helpful because, of course, I want to give the listeners what they want. Otherwise, thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling, and the old email, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Everybody, have a great week.